Hello, this is Chris Parker with the Business Simplicity Podcast. I have just had another conversation with Frank Van Hoof, who's been an enterprise architect at a few organizations that I worked with. And we are having a second round conversation on the podcast around complexity. And we got into a deeper understanding of what complexity is and how it creates itself. We played a little bit around with how to keep things simple. And very interestingly, we got into some dimensions of Dutch politics and company politics and how, approaching simplicity from a perspective of trust instead of fear can really create the space for this very important work. So, hey, Frank, why do you think it would be really valuable for people to listen to this episode?
Well, I think it is valuable because you have to realize, everybody should realize that it takes effort to get things simple, to create simplicity, but that it's, in the end, it's worthwhile, that it really pays out as well. So it's an investment, worthwhile investment. And if you are willing to do so, then it's very helpful to listen to this podcast.
The Business Simplicity Podcast, where leaders share their most successful strategies and the failures that inspired them, so business owners and managers can avoid the suffering and reap the benefits. With your host, Chris Parker.
And welcome back to the Business Simplicity Podcast. This is Chris Parker, and I'm having another conversation with Frank Van Hoof. And late 2022, we had a conversation which was titled Complexity Creates Itself. And I heard back from Frank that, stimulated by that, he was actually invited to an organization and presented about how complexity creates itself. And I couldn't resist the temptation to say, wait a second. So Frank continued some thinking and presented on this in a more complete way. Let's get him back on and continue the conversation. So in the show notes of this episode, I'll put the link to the last episode, which you'll learn more about Frank in detail. But Frank and I have worked together in a couple organizations, him as an enterprise architect. And we've stayed in touch over the years, and I've absolutely enjoyed learning from Frank and discovering things with him. A lot of those things were related to complexity and simplicity and maybe sometimes just being frustrated. Why does an organization demand doing the most complex thing possible? And I think we're going to have fun with that. So, Frank Van Hoof, thanks for joining. I'm going to ask the same question I ask everyone, but I think we're going to jump into the complexity versus simplicity, but Frank Van Hoof, what is it that you do?
Hi, Chris. Well, first of all, thanks for having me on this podcast again. And what I do is I do not have a full assignment, so I'm open for any short-term challenges, actually. But I used to work as an enterprise architect, as you just said, or finance architect. But I also like to think about strategic themes as, for instance, how to make things simple. And that's where I come from, actually. Mm-hmm. And indeed, on the topic of simplicity, I have a long background on that one, and I have learned so much about it that I've been also often been very frustrated by things that were made so much more complex than necessary, and indeed organizations or managers or whatever seem to look for the more complex way, and it puzzled me why, actually, and that's why I started thinking on this topic more also after our first conversation on the complexity creates itself podcast.
And you and I have the benefit of having your slides in front of us. We're not going to show those, but if people are interested in having Frank maybe give a presentation to their team about how and why complexity creates itself and maybe how to see some of those biases that we're going to talk about today, and how to keep things simple, I think that would be delightful. Maybe there's a third evolution, that is, this thinking continues. Also knowing Frank very well. Yeah, also knowing Frank very well, you know, working also in the past with Bahn, the Dutch ERP system. I think if you are looking at your enterprise software and you're thinking to yourself, oh my gosh, how did this become so complex? Then that might be a wonderful project for Frank to sink his teeth into. So, and I'll put his LinkedIn profile link in the show notes in case anyone's inspired. The first cartoon that came up in this presentation was a Dilbert, and of course I love Dilbert, and let me just read it to you and maybe this gets a start. So I don't know the name of the characters, but the little bald guy, you know, talking to Dilbert says, you know, people say the complexity of modern life is a bad thing. And then he continues to reflect. He said, but for useful people such as me, it creates endless opportunities. And then the boss guy, the pointy hair, says, why aren't we done yet? And then the same guy says, well, my smartwatch was infected with ransomware. You know, so it's like, you know, it's just complexity creates a space for the ridiculous, if you ask me. So, and in your case, it was the base for excuses. So, unpack that. Like why did you start with that? What I found hilarious, but very confronting. Essentially saying that the complexity industry is complexity industry. Now we've made it an industry out of it. The complexity industry is basically giving idiots the excuses for their existence. Or am I being too harsh?
Yeah, and also sometimes for their existence, but also to not do things, to just telling things are so complex, then quite some people think, well, yeah, it is complex, so I cannot act yet. I have to think about it. For me, the best example for that in the recent decade is our still Prime Minister, Mark Rutte. If you ask him, or if something is asked him, can you resolve this? Oh, this is very complex. We have to think about it very deeply. And no, and we have to wait, we have to think, because it's very, very complex. And it goes on all topics he is asked to give a solution. And we also know that the Dutch politics, in Dutch politics, hardly anything has happened. Well, there's a lot happened, but not a lot of solutions are being presented, right? Or hardly anything has been resolved. And if we know this, the Mark Rutte figure, then it doesn't give, and you think about it, I don't think anyone has any difficulty to recognize this.
So I think we get some political bias coming into your complexity
as well. Well, but it is not only him. It is really not only him. And it's also in the corporate lives of just lives in corporations.
But is it untrue? Meaning, if you wanted to keep things simple, and if we talk about complexity versus being complicated, and complicated having many moving parts versus complexity where it's very hard to actually anticipate cause and effect in a system, for a politician or an executive, I can imagine something that's perceived as very complicated or complex can also be very scary because, oh my, you know, if I pull part of this system, I have no idea what the unintended consequences may be.
That is not untrue, because it is not, I cannot say that there are no complex problems, of course. So I don't say there is a simple solution for everything. I don't think so. So some things are complex, but basically, I don't know how to start with this actually, because I have a lot of ideas in my head now. But if you look to a holistic picture, then things are not so complex anymore, because then you think of the cause and effect on everything at the same time. And I do not want to make this a political podcast, so I'm trying to think of a good example, but the best example I have in my mind is actually the problems in the Dutch environment, which are ruled by our politicians. But if you can have cause and effect, if you have a single problem, and then you have all kind of side effects, that makes it complex. And if you say, but on these side areas, I have nothing to do with it. That's someone else's problem. Then you make it complex for yourself, because then you try to avoid to have the side effects. I will make this very straightforward example. In the Dutch, but we have in the Netherlands, we have an issue with stikstof. What's that in English? I don't know.
Not carbon. Is it carbon?
Yeah, carbon. Yeah. It's carbon. Well, okay. And the environmental problem, we have a problem with immigrants. Yeah. And we have a problem with the housing that we want to build, houses. We have, and that is stopped because of the level of carbon is too high, which is not okay. We have never environmental problem. Our nature is declining very heavily, and we have not enough houses, and we have, as a lot of people state, at least we have too many immigrants. So if you say, if these are five complex problems, and in a holistic view, half the size of the cattle in the Netherlands, so the number of cows and pigs, etc., then your carbon emission problem is being resolved. Your immigration problem is resolved, because now you can close a lot of slaughteries where a lot of immigrants work. And you can start building houses again, because that you free up a lot of space, which is now taken in by the cows. Right? And so basically, all problems are resolved. But if you only say we halve the cattle, and say, and all these farmers, blah, blah, blah. Of course, you have to find a solution for them, you have to help them. But if you can resolve everything in one go, okay, the benefits are so much bigger, and you gain so much money that the costs of helping those farmers, which have to size down the cattle, that is, you can do that quite easily.
What I hear you arguing is, if you were to look at this more as a holistic problem or opportunity, and say, hey, if we had, and stikstof is nitrogen, I looked it up, by the way, so if you have this nitrogen problem, which can be solved by reducing cattle, and of course, Dutch cheese, cattle, it's a thing, the farmers are quite well organized. you have an immigration opportunity, and then you also have the housing shortage. And if you look at this more holistically, which in a way could make it more complex, but what you're arguing is, what, you know, if you have these distinct opportunities and you bring them together, then they could be somehow synergistic. Is that the argument?
If you can use the side effect, basically it is looking for opportunities, I think, to have the side effects for one problem, turn it into an advantage also for other problems, and not see them as a problem. So the side effect, turn the side effect into a real opportunity for other problems, instead of looking, oh, it's a side effect, so we have to minimize it, because that's scary and it makes it complex. Oh, there you have it. Oh, no, then it makes it complex. So, well, if you look to it in a more holistic view, then you start to look, hey, yes, there are side effects, but can't we use them to our advantage? And in corporate life, for instance, you have similar things, actually. When Sarbanes-Oxley came, which is a completely different cup of tea, of course, then a lot of companies said, oh, it's a burden. But if you look for opportunities, and you have to do it, right? But if you say, okay, but if we can turn it into an advantage that we are marked as very well organized and completely in control, then we might take it as an advantage in our promotions towards, say, partners or customers who are in a volatile environment, and then you make it an advantage for yourself.
I'm wondering if this are we wrestling with simplifying the complex, or maybe we are, or it sounds also like discovering unintended or previously unanticipated positive consequences of making changes. Like, I have my simple business design framework, and I do coaching for individuals and management teams. Another group of consultants has taken that and uses that really well in sustainability, and I've been able to participate as a facilitator in some of those workshops. What I really am amazed at is sustainability is the topic of conversation, but just reflecting on their organization using this business design framework is already just so valuable for them, because they're seeing connections, they're seeing opportunities, they're looking at, go back to typical, sorry, carbon neutrality and sustainability, which is an easy starting point. If people start measuring their carbon footprint, just the act of measuring their business reveals so much value beyond the sustainability goal, that these things are almost instantly paid back. Just because if you take a moment out, look at your business holistically, look at the economy holistically, or look at the nitrogen opportunity holistically. If you take that time to do that reflection and connect those dots, then you can indeed find more elegant. I'm not sure if they're simple, because you're connecting dots across a complex landscape, but certainly more elegant and more valuable outcomes.
I understand completely what you say, and I think it's true, right? Because I think the holistic part is probably the key here as well. Because in the example I just mentioned, and I think it can also take that to other examples as well, it doesn't matter where you start. And now I started with the nitrogen stuff and the half the kettle. But if you say, now housing is the biggest problem we have. So we have to build houses. We have to have land and nitrogen space. Okay, what do we do? Okay, then basically the same, if you can make the same circle, from okay, so we have to free up the land, okay, but there are now cows there, so so we have to size down the cattle size, etc. And then basically you come and start wherever you want. So you can, it is possible at least then, but you have to look to it holistically. If you have 5 different problems and you isolate them as a problem, then I think it is complex. And that's a contradiction in itself, because if you make the space bigger, then it looks like that you give yourself more space to maneuver, and that makes it easier.
I guess there's a perspective of it, because if you're looking at a system perspective versus an individual agent, meaning the impact on the individual farmer who's having to, you know, maybe being on the list that, okay, your farm has to close, and this has been a family, you know, generational topic, then that individual, of course, is impacted greatly. And some farmers will be allowed to maintain themselves. How do you choose that? It can be complex in itself. I know there's a humanness of it. And I think in an organization, that resistance to change for every accurate reason, you know, because if one of your cartoons was about, you know, some people in a boardroom and you can see on the wall that they're brainstorming ideas to reduce supply chain complexity. And the quote underneath is like, well, wait, do you understand that most of our jobs are dependent on supply chain complexity, right? You know, so there is a change management dimension here to look at overall net benefit in a system and in order to inspire simplicity, while each individual agent, if you will, if you want to talk about complex adaptive system theory, each individual agent may have been optimizing for generations in their space. And so how do you overcome that individual farm or that individual employee or that individual department's need for complexity in order to justify their existence?
Yeah, that is, of course, a challenge in itself. I think there the solution lies in that you have to offer alternatives. The farmers we are talking about, it is not they have to stop. They should be different farmers. They should farm differently. Then there is so not only based on production of meat and milk, etc., but also more on grains, etc., and that is to feed the world, but also the nitrogen, it's much better for CO2, it's much better, and you don't need so much space, and you can feed as many, the same amount of people. But that requires a mindset in the mindset not only at the farmers actually, but to the whole environment. Yeah, because the fact that we now say in Netherlands, we have to size down the cattle, that means we have to have less farmers, that is not a solution.
Mm.
So but that is the translation, the direct translation of saying, okay, the cattle has to set size down. The same goes, I think, for the cartoon you just read, ideas for reducing complexity or supply chain complexity. Yeah, as soon as you make sure that there are alternatives, and you might improve on other areas, which these people, which are affected in the supply chain or living from the supply chain complexity, have never thought of. And yes, change, and that it's scary, scary. So there you have, there you have a challenge. And but if you have the mindset to overcome that, to say, okay, you don't have, it will be different. Yeah, but it is hardly ever that jobs have really disappeared in the amount in the past. They've changed.
Well, they've changed, and sometimes they've changed dramatically. So,
and they've changed dramatically. And it's not and it's not said that for all employees are new jobs in the same environment, etc., or in the same company. But if but there are always opportunities. But it's also a mindset. If you think this is what I can and I can and nothing else, then you have a problem. Then that's the
Well, I guess if we follow, and if you opt into your default unconscious human organizations at scale, then complexity definitely creates itself. We know that. I can say we've proven that on the previous podcast. Anecdotally, certainly. Scientifically, not so sure. But I think we can see that, that if you have organizational departments, people optimizing for their own needs without structures like process, lean, measures, then it'll get pretty chaotic and pretty complex fast. What it sounds like from the Dutch farming example is what Mark, the prime minister, maybe is ignoring is the if there was a shared definition of success. And so what I hear from you is if the solving the housing issue was the primary opportunity that they needed to fixate on and start from there, as opposed to the nitrogen reduction. I'm not saying this is what's actually happening, because I don't follow politics of any nature. But the if you had a clear definition of success, so if we want to optimize the system for this purpose, then that could already reframe the dialogue and the engagement with each of the parties in that to say, hey, we are optimizing for this, and we can see that there's intended and unintended consequences, both positive and negative, in your space that feel and look like this. And if there's a sense of togetherness, so people start to acknowledge that, hey, yeah, okay, I can imagine that indeed we're contributing to this in that way. Mm-hmm. Even directly or indirectly, and let's start talking about making these shifts. But if is this resonating with you? Like if we're starting to talk about, well, how to keep things simple, is having a clear measure of success and some sort of structured dialogue part of that, or would you recommend something else?
Yeah. Well, and I thought about this conversation, which on the podcast, another thing came into my mind, and that is, and it also relates very much, but if you can avoid to act from fear, that would be probably, then that's also a good thing. Good thing to have in mind. Because I think it is very often we act individually or collectively out of fear. And if all kind of fears, but it's all everything is all almost everything is fear driven. And the fear of missing out, for instance, that is a be something else. But again, that in politics, whether you're right wing or left wing, everyone is appealing for fear. It might be different fears, and it's just, you know, my threat is much more important than his or her threat.
Mm-hmm.
So the threats of Islam taking over here in the Netherlands is much worse than all this nitrogen and nature and some stupid things of these left-wingers. And the left-wingers said, okay, these few people and these few immigrants, and who cares? If we take care of our nature and environment, then we can handle it. But that is most important for them. But they both appeal to fear. Fear of a disaster of nature, or that our culture is completely taken off from us. And that is also an individual level. That's how Cthulhu read out earlier. Realize that our jobs are dependent on this supply chain complexity. So also fear. So if you could, and that is a real life challenge. Again, if you can turn that thinking around in an organization. So if you can say, and that is, and it comes close to what we discussed earlier. And that's why. So if you do not see, say, size effect is a threat or is a fear, but there's an opportunity to improve further, then you immediately also walk away from fear. The fear of doing something wrong.
And if you believe you should not operate out of fear, what is the opposite of that?
Basically, trust. And so, and I don't know whether I thought of an example as well. So if we now act very often out of fear, for instance, we pay too much taxes, or these people who get money from the government because of whatever reason they are ill or whatever. Oh, if we do not pay them enough, and we now we have this big scandal. If you would turn it around, so the fear was we pay too much for people who are not obliged to get it.
They're not eligible. Yeah. They shouldn't be receiving.
But if you would take away, we are of the fear is we do not give everyone the money where he is eligible for, then it's a completely different mindset. And that would.
What do you mean? Can you describe the shift differently?
Well, that it is, we make sure that everybody receives the money where he is entitled to, instead of he has to come to us and proof he is entitled to, but we as the government in this case, do everything what we can do to give the people who are entitled to a something that they will receive it.
So yes, you're saying to maximize benefit as opposed to minimize fraud.
Don't think too much about fraud as well.
Maybe maximize impact and minimize mistake.
Of course, you minimize mistake, making mistakes. And the thought there is a little bit in how it's in my mind, at least, when there are inquiries on who are the happiest people in the world. For a long term, the Scandinavian countries were very high on the list. I think still are. And the next question I ask then is, okay, and who pay most taxes? Where are tax rates the highest? In Scandinavia. Okay, is that a coincidence or not? I don't know, but I don't think so, actually.
Well, I don't think you can look at it as a simple cause and effect like that. You pay taxes, you're higher. I think that is simplifying things dramatically. I think also in Scandinavia, that at least in some of the Scandinavian countries, they've got such amazingly deep wealth reserves due to oil, gas, and other natural resources.
There's only Norway, actually.
But there's a sense of safety, of continuity. Maybe lack of scarcity in that case.
But there you can also question, is that where is the cause and why is that there?
Well, I don't know. I guess we're probably getting political judgment here, but Scandinavian countries are pretty small. I think culturally they're pretty defined. And I think, you know, like the Polder model in the Netherlands and the government structure in the Netherlands, my American friends are fascinated by it. But come on, we have 18 million people versus their however, how many hundreds of millions of people are in the U.S.? So I don't even know anymore, 200 million or something. There's such a diversity of population in the U.S. and human nature says things that are different than me are scary. You know, I think we're slowly overcoming that. Mm-hmm. I think the collapsing of borders and the fact that, you know, social media and stuff, we're able to see, wait, you know, these people might look and smell and act differently than me, but actually they're still human. You know, they still have the needs. They still want their children to, you know, grow up and you know, succeed. I think that another dimension in Scandinavia is that there is their tribe, if you will, is pretty similar, and over time, like a good friend of mine, Christian, who's editing the podcast, comes from Denmark, and apparently there are still cultural sort of reverberations over the generations of the way that those tribes in the past used to work. Meaning there were, you know, like when Vikings were raiding, you know, there wasn't assistance Vikings. You know, they all did the heavy lifting. They all collaborated. They all gave to the social whole. And you can still see some of those cultural patterns, I think, carrying forward. Compared to, like, for example, the U.S., which I think there's 11 distinct cultural patterns, cultural groups coming from very distinct places that are solving problems in very different ways. Therefore, it's very easy for you're wrong, I'm right. And of course, the Americans love you're wrong, I'm right. It doesn't really create the space for this engagement and dialogue. Not sure where I'm going with that, but I think if there's a lack of fear, so if there's a trust, there's an embracing, if there's an abundance mindset that, okay, maybe my farm needs to shift from cows to grain and I'll have support for that and I'll have understanding for that and my family will be okay, my family legacy will be okay, my children will be okay. That's a very human conversation to have. But many politicians in companies and in public life, I think, are feeding on that fear. And so it's really it's not in their best interest to say, actually, don't worry, we'll all be okay, we'll figure this out. That doesn't get votes. You know, so I think there's another dimension here as well. But
that's on this completely right. That I 100% agree with you. Unfortunately, but that is the case.
Yeah, I think it's a human condition. So I don't know, is there a way to...
It's, Well, what you said, talked about the US, which I recognize as well, of course, and many people will. I'm right, you're wrong. That you, if that is your attitude, that you always have, you have to point to someone who is wrong.
Right.
Because I know I was right, because that's me. So I only have to find the other who is wrong. So, but then you create this distance and basically also kind of fear. If I would become like him or her, no, that's not what I want. So then you get that. Yeah, what is happening in the US, of course, this distance becomes only, of the gap becomes only wider over time.
I think if we bring this back to sort of corporate organizations, you're right, I'm wrong. Then, you know, I hear this between sales and marketing people. I hear this between, you know, operations and support from the delivery or manufacturing people. I hear this from IT people and everybody else. and some of the, I think it's also, it's, you know, scarcity, it's budget, it's control. Sometimes the control is justified, but I keep hearing, and I find it so fascinating, how to solve the problem of shadow IT. And those that don't know, shadow IT is like if you're an IT director and you give someone a laptop and you install Microsoft Word on it, and then for some reason, Microsoft Word doesn't work for them and they need to use something else, a Google document for something, maybe because they have to talk to their customer with Google Docs. Then the IT people say, oh, shadow IT, that's bad. You know, you're causing complexity. When actually what they're doing is like, well, actually my measurement is productivity. I need to talk to my customer. They prefer Google Docs. That's what I got to do. And so then actually your simplistic view of the world is actually causing problems. But I think in there, it's a shift of expectation. Say, hey, if we as a management team want to create a space where our humans are the most productive, and by productive, we mean in a sustainable, healthy way for them and a value creating way for our customers. And if that is our primary goal, of course, there's a lot in that. Then you can start having this dialogue to say, okay, maybe shadow IT is a positive enabler. It's a you know, there's positive side effects, consequences to this action. And maybe the role of the IT director, instead of being, you know, Dr. No policeman, is actually saying, okay, my role is no longer to quote unquote do IT for everyone, but it's actually to enable everyone to do their IT. And I think if you have a paradigm shift there, that can help at least simplify the conversations about and decisions that can be made, and decisions delegated closer to the shop floor instead of up to some boardroom where actually the politicians of an organization do get frozen because like, this feels very complex and scary. I don't know what to do. I need to consult consultants. I don't know. Yeah. What's happening, Frank, what's happening in you as I'm rambling about my frustration with shadow IT being a problem?
Well, I don't know. Well, it's like you say, whether shadow IT is a problem or not, I think there we have also a shift in time. So there, I think some time ago, shadow IT probably was an issue. Because it was communication between different modules was much more complex than it is now. So, and developments go faster. And so if you want to stick to your central IT organization and central IT infrastructure, you're always lagging behind. That is, I think, the frustration of a lot of people who use this or build up the shadow IT. Yeah? And they're not entitled because they're not even from IT. So how can they know? Yeah? That's also something. You're not an IT expert. No, that's us. Yeah? also against versus them. But yeah, so there I think you have, as an organization, you have to see the new reality, which is that shadow IT probably is not an issue anymore. I think you have to, where you have to take care of is what you want to have. You have to be very carefully choose what you do want to control centrally. And that is, for instance, I think the financials. You cannot allow that numbers do not add up in your financial department. I think. But it's not so difficult neither to.
I think there's some cultures out there that I know of that might take offense to that because they don't want their financials to add up because they're.
But that's not the CFO. Probably not the CFO.
No, exactly. So that's
the CFO should.
Your financials should balance and.
Yeah.
So, and be accurate as possible.
Be accurate. So there you want to control what is, but if it is sales and marketing, you have to be very flexible in that area. You always have to be very flexible.
Yeah, in sales and marketing, how do you make a forecast? It's just guesses, and when you talk about sales projections, it's just probabilities. And if you talk about pricing, certainly in enterprise land, it's all a negotiation. So that, everything is moving there. But at some point, it needs to land in a revenue and a cost, and that is your result. So Frank, if we've been playing around with complexity creating itself and starting to unpack how people can achieve a bit more simplicity, and we went through some political detours and some looping around and playing around. I'm curious. When you expressed, you put some time into this presenting complexity creates itself and gave some tips at the end about, how to keep things simple. What were the main themes that came out of this next round of thinking that we really want to leave people with, either knowing that complexity creates itself with certain biases and some key tips on how to keep things simple?
I think, and it completely resonates with what we have said. To create good simplicity, you have to master the problem. So you have to have deep knowledge. So there's, in Dutch it's both simple, but in English you have simplistic and you have simplicity. So you have to be aware that you do not confuse simplicity with simplisticness. So you have to really master the problem, and therefore you have to look to it in a more holistic view, I think. And most important, I think, in the end, is ask. You are not alone in the world and you do not know everything. And if you really want to see also how the site's effect might affect or not affect, or benefit, and I do not want to preach that all side effects are just beneficial, and probably not right from the start, but if you can turn that into a challenge that it might turn into an improvement as well somewhere else, then you are on the right track. Then at least you take away hurdles. You say, okay, probably we have now a small hurdle or a hurdle, but on the long term, we can also overcome that. And don't be too scared of that. But basically, I think that is the best thing. And basically, you have to try to think about does it work for the organization? Get away from does it work for me?
Well, looking back at your slides, you have it under pitfall with simplistic versus simplicity, and in the column of simplistic is ignorance, inattention, laziness, easy for me, easy for us,
right.
And simplicity was a knowledge, spirit of helping, honesty, sincerity, easy for them. So it's even, yeah, easier for the organization. I think there's an element of effort and consciousness, meaning if you know sometimes I talk about lazy leadership versus love leadership. Lazy leadership, so it's just like, oh, this is too complex, I can't figure this out, I can't do this, or it's overly simplistic, it's just broken, it can't be fixed, whatever. And then actually there's an act of caring to say, well, wait a second, there can be, in the spirit of abundance, a space for and instead of or. And I love inspiring people to think about that, to say, hey, you know, can this be an and question? Like, you know, how come this has to be zero sum, win, lose? Are you sure? Are you certain that that's in fact true? Or is this some sort of just assumption and bias that is in fact not true at all?
Very good. And another element, I think, what is key is a very good preparation. So you have to prepare the topic. What I have a little bit what I've experienced in some efforts. So we just start, and then we'll see what happens. I think if you prepare well, then you are, at least that's my belief, then you are much more in the position to be successful. And that does not mean, in my view, that you have to detail it out till the last dot and comma. That is something else, but you, at least you have to know what you want to achieve and also to some extent how you want to achieve it. So, but basically, most of all, what do you want to achieve and why? And
getting to that might not be the as obvious to some people, but it's as you know, with me, I like to separate the problem thinking from the solution thinking, and mm-hmm. it really helps to have a consensus of what is the vision or the why, what is the reason for this. Okay, we're trying to optimize this, and then think about the different problems, and then give that a bit of a rest or an emotional break and distance, and then get into the solution thinking. Because if you don't know why, what we're optimizing for, what we're trying to solve, and if you mix up your problem thinking with solution thinking, my belief is you just get more complex problems. You know, so there needs to be a process and an intention about this.
Very, very true. I think because that is a pitfall, that we think with the solution thinking. Well, to come back to the farmers again, half the cattle is not a solution, or is not a problem. That is not what you want to achieve. It might be. It's not a goal. No, it's not a goal. Let's put it that way. It might end up that it has to happen, but the goal is to limit the nitrogen output and create space that you can build again, etc. And blah, blah, blah. That is the goal, the consequence. But if you should not turn it around. To have less cattle is not the goal in itself.
Yeah.
So if you put it as limited as that, then you get a lot of opposition and why, because we are taking care of our accounts and blah, 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 blah. And then you get all kinds of discussions which do not contribute to the goal. And the problem is there. We have laid that down in laws even. The judges say, okay, no, this is no longer, this cannot be done anymore. We cannot grow or stay this way because of the laws we have made ourselves. So also there, if you make the solution the problem, so to speak, or if you do not have the bigger goal constantly in sight or in mind, then you might have a very wrong discussions. And that is, I think, in work life, it's not different. Shadow IT, as an example, there is to try to get that eliminated. That should not be a goal in itself. It might be, in the past, it might have been for very good reasons, but the goal was then to control your IT environment. And have good connections between everyone using your IT. But that problem, that is no longer a problem. So should the goal then be the same?
Yeah, I think the context has shifted, and then we've like you've said, we've embodied in policies, organizational structures, rule descriptions, so the law of a company. We've enshrined some of these structures in law, internal company culture and law and systems and structure, and then indeed the context is changing and is requiring a revisit of those things. And that can be, if you approach it from a position of fear, then that can be quite traumatic and stressful. And then, but I guess this is also the leadership role to create the space for, clarity of end goal, create the clarity that, innovation comes from this constant improvement, open to new solutions to either old or emerging opportunities. So there's a strong element of leadership here, but I think that what I love about your work on this is making it conscious that actually the system is working against you. So and people throw away the comment, oh, well, we should make things more simple, but very few people are aware that it is an intentional act and it requires an investment of care. And in order to truly simplify it, you need to have, that awareness and respect for very diverse needs in order to find those elegant solutions. Or you're just going to create frustration, anger, and probably even more complexity and suboptimal results. So.
The environment will change. The environment changes. That is a given. So any solution for which is valid today might be outdated tomorrow. Yeah? And that calls for that. In my view, that calls for simple solutions, because then at least you know very relatively quickly what is going wrong. But it does not mean that also the simple solution will work forever. If the circumstances change,
it can't work forever. Yeah.
No, for sure not, actually.
Yeah, so I sometimes shock people that it's like, oh man, we just really worked on this. We did this, the business alignment work and stuff. And I know one thing, for sure, everyone, that this is wrong already. Like, what? We just spent days working on it. Like, yeah, okay, well, it's good enough for now. but stuff's going to change. So it's almost immediately wrong. So, you know, it's like the fact that you've written it down doesn't make it true. You know, keep your eyes open. So, well, Frank Van Hoef, my dream for this is that if people were triggered and if they want to have a conversation in their organization to raise the awareness that complexity creates itself and to discover some ways to keep things simple, that they invite you to engage with them and present this to them. And my absolute dream would be is if you come back with yet another version and another refinement of this story after interacting with people, and then we have yet another conversation, because this is really the heart of my work. And as you know, I just adore having conversations with you and talking about abstract concepts like complexity and simplicity and trying to tie it to the human condition and what we're all trying to achieve every day, which is to be more satisfied and happy in life. So Frank Van Hoef, for everyone, I will put the link to the original episode in the show notes and also a link to his LinkedIn profile so you can reach out to Frank. I think you might have even given me your email address to put on there. I remember that right? Yes. So his email address is going to be right on the show notes. So if you want to reach out to Frank, and when you do, also let me know, because I want to have an excuse to have Frank back on the podcast and talk about different things than maybe we normally do, and go into interesting and fascinating corners of humanity. Frank Van Hoef, thank you so much.
Thank you, Chris. Again, as well. It's always a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you for listening. Download the Simplicity Toolkit from ebullience.com to discover the power of the Simplicity Scan and Sprint. Don't forget to like and subscribe to the podcast on your favorite player.